week left.
Guantanamo has always been a question of political will. Biden actually has an opportunity to do more than he has already done. Perhaps the single most remarkable thing about the transfer of the 11 prisoners this week is that there has been complete silence from the Republican camp. And that's because Guantanamo is no longer as politically valuable as it once was. The Republican, and this may be the depressing way of looking at it, the Republicans have so thoroughly won on every front, including with the last election, that they no longer need to beat up the Democrats over Guantanamo. And in that lies an opportunity for President Biden.
And even with DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, the $500 million spent on a prison for what, it's now 15 men, Pardis? Your final comment.
And concretely, there are 6 of the 15 men have never been charged, will never be charged. 3 of those men have been cleared for transfer and are awaiting transfer. Those men should be transferred at a minimum, and that includes a CCR client who remains, Guli Duran Hassan from Somalia. At a minimum, this DOJ should drop its opposition to their habeas cases, to the habeas cases of anyone who will remain.
And are you calling for the prison to be closed?
We are calling for the end of the system of indefinite detention to close, and they are very close to doing that. That can be done.
We're going to leave it there. Pardis Kabriai is a senior staff attorney with the Center for Constitutional Rights, and attorney Ramzi Kassem is a professor at CUNY Law School. Their clients are Yemeni prisoners just transferred to Oman. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
New year, new KBOO. Thank you to everyone who contributed and supported KBOO during our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign. With help from our community, we were able to reach our $75,000 goal and will be able to continue bringing you grassroots independent community radio. If you didn't get a chance to contribute during our year-end campaign, you can still support KBOO by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give and join the team.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland Public Schools approves an away all-day phone policy starting next fall.
Providence nurses across Oregon will head to the picket line Friday in the largest nurses' strike in Oregon history.
And in national news, over 100,000 people are under evacuation orders in the most destructive set of fires in Los Angeles history.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 8th, 2025. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Josh Salem. The Portland Public Schools Governing Board voted last night to adopt a district-wide policy substantially limiting students' use of cell phones. Under the new policy, all students in the district, and regardless of grade, must turn off their phones, smartwatches, and other personal electronic devices during school hours. That includes lunch periods. The policy does have some exceptions. For example, students with disabilities who need personal devices to communicate. Cell phones can also be used for approved academic activities or programs. The superintendent and school administrators do have some flexibility when implementing the policy at the school level. Students who do not follow the policy will be subject to the standing discipline guidelines and could have their devices confiscated. The school board approved the policy on a 5-2 vote, with members Herman Green and Gary Hollins voting in opposition. The student representative to the board used a symbolic vote against it. The school board has been discussing the issue since last April. The board policy committee reviewed literature on the impact of school cell phone policies, as well as sample policies from different school districts. Many community members weighed in, with several people submitting comments just last month to be considered in the night's decision. Early discussions stated there might be financial implications. Cell phone storage equipment options vary from $8,000 to $750,000, and the board called for further exploration to determine the best options for that aspect of implementation of the policy. The policy goes into effect immediately, but the timeline for implementing it in local schools is unclear.
5,000 nurses are planning to walk off the job from Oregon Providence Hospitals on Friday. It's an open-ended strike, meaning there isn't a set end date. The Union for the Nurses, the Oregon Nurses Association, say they cannot come to an agreement with Providence after weeks of intensive bargaining. The potential strike is also notable because some doctors and advanced practitioners will be striking with them. That's the first time this has happened in Oregon. Nurses and doctors plan to strike at all 8 Providence hospitals in Oregon. Providence hospitals in Portland, Hood River, Seaside, Oregon City, Newburgh, Milwaukee, and Medford will see nurses and caregivers on the picket line. The strike also includes unionized caregivers at 6 women's clinics across the state. Providence has posted hundreds of temporary positions offering $100 an hour for people willing to cross the nurses' picket line. In a strike announcement, the Nurses Association wrote, quote, "The corporatization of healthcare has left many Providence employees frustrated and burnt out as they are being told to spend less and less time with patients and more time trying to drive up profits," end quote. The Nurses Association has planned a solidarity rally with the striking caregivers at Providence. It's planned for Saturday at 1 p.m. at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. The Friday strike by the Oregon Nurses Association will be the largest in Oregon history.
A new report from the Bipartisan Policy Center recommends that states invest in reforms to the behavioral health system to support young people who are struggling with their mental health. Crystal Blair spoke to the Associate Director of the Policy Center to learn more.
Recommendations from the Youth Mental Health and Substance Abuse Task Force include the need to grow the behavioral health workforce and make it easier for providers to join insurance networks. The report reveals nationwide, teen mental health worsened from 2013 to 2023, with young people reporting feelings of sadness and hopelessness rising from 30% to 40%. Michelle Gosda with the Bipartisan Policy Center shares the thought process behind the recommendations.
The things that work for adults getting into care may or may not work the same for kids and their families. So part of what the task force set out to do is make sure that the recommendations were very actionable, that they can be achieved.
The report recommends that Congress fund grants of up to $2 million over 3 years to create 10 regional centers focused on building the behavioral health workforce. Another recommendation is that government agencies should work together to gather better data on young people who are incarcerated and find ways to reduce youth suicide, including in jails, prison, and after release. Gosda says during the pandemic and the couple of years before, that overdose deaths skyrocketed. However, she says the numbers have since come down, and she credits in part one important change.
Fortunately, during the pandemic, if there's one silver lining, it's that youth.
That was Crystal Blair. Social media platforms Facebook and Instagram will no longer be fact-checking posts. Meta chief executive Mark Zuckerberg announced that Facebook, Threads, and Instagram would be ending their third-party fact-checking system. It'll be replaced with a Twitter or X-style community notes feature. The company is also revising its rules to allow more criticism of certain groups, including immigrants and transgender people. Zuckerberg says Meta's old rules resulted in too much censorship and that it should return to its roots as a platform for free expression. A reporter asked President-elect Donald Trump about these changes, saying, quote, "Do you think Zuckerberg's directly responding to the threats that you've made to him in the past?" Trump replied, quote, "Probably. Yes, probably." Meta is also moving its content review operations from California to Texas to avoid, Zuckerberg said, the appearance of political bias.
Over 1,000 structures have been destroyed, and at least 5 are dead, in the 5 fast-moving firestorms outside of Los Angeles. Over 100,000 people are under evacuation orders from the Pacific Palisades wildfires. The fires have been intensified by the Santa Ana winds, with hurricane-force gusts nearing a record 100 miles per hour. Evacuation has proved difficult, as there is just one highway by which to leave the area. Some evacuees had to abandon their cars and flee on foot after one wildfire jumped the fire line and the road. About 400,000 Southern Californians were without power this morning because of powerful winds or because utility providers had turned off their electricity to prevent more fires. Some videos have been posted of areas already burned through by the fires, showing little to no structure surviving the blazes. L.A. County Fire Chief Anthony Marone said, quote, "There are not enough firefighters in L.A. County to address four separate fires of this magnitude," end quote. Additional firefighters are coming from Oregon, Washington, and Nevada. Oregon is sending 240 firefighters and 60 engines. They're expected to arrive by noon tomorrow. Fighting the fires is also straining the area's water supplies. Some fire hydrants have already run dry, according to the Los Angeles Times. Officials say that was a water pressure and delivery issue. They also say the water system hasn't been updated to be climate resilient. Five deaths have been reported due to the Eaton Canyon fire. Wind gusts up to 60 miles per hour are expected to continue through Thursday, likely expanding the footprint of the fires.
When you apply for a consumer loan in the near future, the lender considering the request can't factor in any medical debt. The new federal rule poised to take effect says those listings on your credit report will be excluded from the loan application process. As Mike Mullen reports, in states like South Dakota that have a high percentage of folks burdened with medical debt, it's expected to be a big help.
South Dakota is among the states with the highest percentage of residents carrying medical debt. A new federal rule announced this week could ease some of the pressure when they apply for loans. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has finalized a rule that says credit agencies can't share a person's medical debt history with a lending institution requesting credit information. The only debt details that can be relayed to determine a person's credit worthiness are mortgages, car loans, credit cards, and similar activity. Patricia Kelmar of the Public Interest Research Group says organizations like hers had long pushed for this move.
Medical debt is not really indicative of somebody's ability or desire to pay back a loan. Oftentimes people are in a situation where they get a bad medical diagnosis or they've been in a car accident. Suddenly they have a lot of medical bills.
According to the Peterson KFF Health System Tracker, nearly 18% of South Dakota adults report having medical debt. The national average is 8%. Some credit agencies already exclude medical debt in loan situations, and Kelmar acknowledges the incoming Trump administration could seek to reverse this rule change, as some advisors have said they want to do away with the CFPB altogether. Pushback also is expected from debt collection firms. But Kelmar says skeptics should know that keeping medical debt out of the equation is good for the overall economy.
The long arm of medical debt can really hurt people's financial future and their ability to get better.
For example, she says a person emerging from a medical scare might need a new car to rejoin the workforce, but the sudden health care debt they incurred might get in the way. The new rule will be effective 60 days after it's published in the Federal Register. This is Mike Mullen for Greater Dakota News Service.
Vice President Harris delivers a eulogy for Jimmy Carter. And President-elect Trump says he might use military action to take the Panama Canal in Greenland. With more on those stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Jimmy Carter established a new model for what it means to be a former president and leaves an extraordinary post-presidential legacy.
Vice President Kamala Harris honoring Jimmy Carter as the former president lies in state at the Capitol. Harris says Carter will be remembered for what he did in the White House and after, including work with Habitat for Humanity and advancing peace and democracy worldwide through the Carter Center. President-elect Donald Trump is criticizing Carter for giving away the Panama Canal and says it might have cost him his re-election. Trump says he isn't ruling out military action to take the canal in Greenland, which he says the U.S. needs for its economic security.
The Panama Canal is vital to our country. It's being operated by China. China. And we gave the Panama Canal to Panama. We didn't give it to China.
Trump also says he wants to redraw the maps in another way, changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. Trump loyalist Republican Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene says she'll sponsor the bill.
It's absolutely the right thing to do. We change post office names all the time up here.
The Gulf is a hotspot for offshore oil drilling, which Trump is promising to expand. The president-elect has also long criticized Mexico on trade and immigration. The House has passed the GOP-led Laken and Riley Act, requiring detention of undocumented migrants charged with crimes like theft. The bill's named for a 22-year-old nursing student murdered last year by an undocumented Venezuelan immigrant, but it faces an uncertain future in the Senate. Washington progressive Democratic Representative Pramila Jayapal calls it extreme.
Imagine your child is with a group of kids grabbing an after-school snack at a 7-Eleven, and one of them chooses to just snitch a little candy bar off the shelf. If your child is a DACA recipient, they are now subject to mandatory detention under this bill.
Trump has announced that a business associate of his from the United Arab Emirates will invest $20 billion in new U.S. data centers. He says one of the first sites will be in Ohio. And John Hyland with the city of Canton says it could be transformative.
We are open and available and would be willing to talk to anyone about that possibility, you know, within the city of Canton if we can make it work.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an interview with Kanani Cortez from Street Roots about her latest article. It's on volunteering in the new year. At 6, it's Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 39 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 50. Today in history, in 1982, the U.S. government breaks up the monopoly of the Bell telecommunication system. AT&T was then broken up into 22 subdivisions, but regulatory changes in 1996 allowed the smaller companies to merge with each other, leaving six companies controlling the former Bell system as of 2024. The quote of the day is from Italian astronomer Galileo Galilei, who died this day in 1642. He said, quote, "Measure what is measurable, and make measurable what is not so."
President Biden has created two new national monuments in California, in a move that's been applauded by tribes. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A signing ceremony is expected to take place next week for two national monuments in California, which include tribal cultural and sacred sites. The White House announced the designations Tuesday, and an event was to take place in the state but was postponed due to high winds. Congressman Raul Ruiz, whose district includes parts of the 624,000-acre Chuckwalla National Monument, says the lands will now be protected from development.
This is one of these unique examples where you have both the conservation and tribal leaders, as well as the renewable energy and utility companies, all endorsing this enormous monument.
The area south of Joshua Tree National Park is also habitat for the Chuckwalla lizard, bighorn sheep, and the endangered desert tortoise. Thomas Torres is former chair of the Torres Martinez Band of Cahuilla Indians.
The next step is to strategically develop a co-stewardship plan, put all those resources together, and then start to protect the land.
The White House also intends to designate a new national monument near Shasta Lake in Northern California. Brandy McDaniels with the Pitt River Tribe says they've been fighting development in the area for decades.
As socioeconomically suppressed communities, having to fight against people with deep pockets and have all the money in the world to come in and destroy our lands. That's what we've been fighting to protect for a very long time.
Tribal leaders are also calling on President Biden to designate one more national monument in California before the end of his term. This week, Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland shared her perspective about the agency's Federal Indian Boarding School Initiative and President Joe Biden's apology to Indian country. In a blog post on the Interior Department's website, Haaland says, of all the work in the department under the Biden-Harris administration, one of the most significant, she says, has been the boarding school initiative, which she launched in 2021. Haaland shares thoughts about her own family history with the Indian boarding schools. A day ahead of Biden's apology, Haaland told National Native News she's been personally impacted.
decades ago when I was sitting at my grandmother's kitchen table and talking to her about boarding schools, she didn't tell me everything, right? I knew there was more to what she was telling me.
Holland says she still feels the impact of injustices on her ancestors, including that her great-grandpa, being more than 100 miles away from his daughter's boarding school, only had a horse and wagon.
He was able to only visit her twice during the 5 years that she was there. Her time there, her dad's time at boarding school, that affected my life, and I didn't realize how much it affected my life, right, until I got a little bit older.
Holland's boarding school initiative included an investigative report and a listening tour across Indian country. President Biden traveled to a tribal community in Arizona in October, where he formally apologized to Native Americans and Alaska Natives. In December, President Biden established the Carlisle Federal Indian Boarding School National Monument. In the blog post, Holland says the work is not finished, but she also talks about healing. The Pennington County Commission in South Dakota has approved a statue commemorating the search for justice for missing and murdered Indigenous peoples. The statue, created by the Red Ribbon Skirt Society, will be installed outside the county administration building. The base of the statue's plaque reads, "And her name shall be Justice." The small-scale mock-up of the statue features a woman in traditional regalia holding an eagle feather. Artist Rachel Berg of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe is creating the statue. The Red Ribbon Skirt Society has raised about half of the statue's cost and hopes to install it by summer. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
In November and December, there was a noticeable uptick in the amount of E. coli outbreaks coming from vegetables bought at the grocery store. Scientists say the contaminations are likely due to poor farming practices, including using water contaminated by cattle manure to rinse fresh produce in the field. Mark Richardson reports.
Medical experts say recent outbreaks of toxic E. coli bacteria in the American food chain are a byproduct of unsanitary practices on factory farms. While E. coli is primarily found in ground beef, inspectors say it has also been discovered in carrots, onions, walnuts, and cheese. In the last half of 2024, it has caused almost 200 illnesses, one death, and several product recalls. Microbiologist Alfred Torres with the University of Texas Medical Branch says experts suspect so-called efficient production practices at large commercial farms are to blame.
Normally they have the cows in higher ground and the vegetables that were seeding and all these areas in lower ground. So it was found, especially in California, is when rainy season started, manure from the cattle, it contaminated the vegetables.
E. coli is produced in cows' intestines and spread through their manure. Torres says scientists are unsure exactly how the bacteria are transmitted to plants. He says there are numerous varieties of E. coli and most are harmless, but one strain, the Shiga toxin, is poisonous and even fatal to humans. A recent article in the online journal Sentient points out that cattle farms and slaughterhouses are primary sources of E. coli pollution. While toxins can be transmitted through cross-contamination in meat, experts say water used to clean the waste from areas where cows are processed can also be contaminated. Boris says studies show runoff from factory farms has higher concentrations of E. coli than those located more than 5 miles away.
Now the bacteria somehow is able to adapt and survive in this environment. Obviously, that was a red flag for all these farmers, indicating that they were rinsing the fields with contaminated water, and it was clear that they were contaminating the vegetables.
Food Safety and Inspection Service of the USDA tests random samples of raw beef for E. coli before they're sent to restaurants or retailers and conducts regular inspections of produce farms. Torres says more research is needed to better understand how E. coli is transmitted to plants. For Texas News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
Humans aren't the only ones who need help when the worst happens. Weather disasters strain animal shelters, too. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz tells us more with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When extreme weather hits, pet shelters may struggle to care for the dogs and cats in their facilities. For example, when Hurricane Helene devastated western North Carolina last fall,
most of the facilities had no water, no power.
Martin F. is president and CEO of the Forsyth Humane Society in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, which is outside the region that was hardest hit. To help, his group collected donations of food, water, and supplies. They then partnered with the Bissell Pet Foundation and others to send those supplies by plane to areas in need. and to evacuate shelter pets back to their own facility and others across the state.
So throughout this process, almost 800 animals have been moved out of Western North Carolina.
Neff says the animals suffered enormous stress during the event, but most are recovering. They're unlikely to return to the communities they came from. As shelters reopened after the storm, many filled up with new animals whose owners were no longer able to care for them because of the disaster. So shelters even far away from the site of the storm are housing a larger number of cats and dogs. And as climate change causes more extreme weather, the burden on rescue organizations and the need for people to adopt pets is likely to grow.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
New cryptocurrency ATMs are popping up in grocery stores and gas stations in Washington state and across the country. Law enforcement agencies say they've become a favorite for scammers. The Federal Trade Commission reports Washington already saw the highest rate in the nation of imposter scams reported in 2023. Police and consumer advocacy groups are pushing for more regulation. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
They may offer people a legitimate way to convert cash into cryptocurrency, but crypto ATMs are also popular with scammers. Washington had the highest rate of reported imposter scams in the country in 2023, according to the Federal Trade Commission. The Spokane City Council recently passed a resolution supporting more state regulations for the crypto ATMs, including limits on how much can be withdrawn daily. Detective Tim Schwering with the Spokane Police Department says his office is receiving two or three calls a day about crypto ATM scams.
$50,000 is very common in losses. You know, $100,000, $200,000 in losses, entire life savings wiped out from these types of scams.
Schwering says most of the scams center around fake romantic relationships or bogus investment opportunities. He adds most of the scammers are based in countries that don't have diplomatic relationships with U.S. law enforcement. And even if he can find the money in countries like China, Russia, or North Korea, he can't get it back. Schwering says investment scams can be especially hard to recognize because scammers will allow victims to withdraw some money after making it look like their investment has grown on a fake website. Once victims feel secure that they can withdraw their supposed earnings, the con escalates. The FBI estimates Americans were robbed of close to $6 billion in 2023 through crypto-related scams.
So when you're making that kind of money, you can put money into building websites that are They look like legitimate investment websites.
Schwering is working with the Washington State Department of Financial Institutions on legislation to limit the amount of money that someone can deposit into a crypto ATM to $1,000 a day. He says this won't solve the problem, but could help mitigate the potential losses. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
KBOO news poet Dan Raphael sees starting the year badly is a sign of great potential.
My wife got the flu for Christmas. Later, I spent three nights trying to sleep while I hiccuped every 3 seconds, and the basement sprung a leak. Seems appropriate to begin 2025 this way. Donnie's election got certified, and he's not waiting for inauguration to show his crazy. Yesterday, he threatened military action against the Panama Canal in Greenland. Could be Donnie's year of miracles, spending billions on deportations, increasing military spending, extending his last term's tax bonanza for the wealthiest, all without increasing the deficit. Meanwhile, our new city council is getting their closed-door hazing and initiation into the back rooms and sluices of power. At least the rain stopped for a few days, and the Arctic vortex is staying well east of here. A good time to start making plans with friends, neighbors, and progressive organizations. The powerful are overconfident. Man, are we going to surprise them? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 8th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, David Rosenberg, and Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is the esteemable Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Crystal Blair, Alex Gonzalez, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and Cyline. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined by Kanani Cortez, digital producer from Street Roots, to talk about her newest story. It's called New Year to Volunteer. Volunteering and community services are perennial New Year's resolutions. Here's how you can sustain your 2025 motivation throughout the year. Welcome to the show, Kanani.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on to talk with us. So your story this week is all about volunteering around town and some things to consider before getting started. You talk to folks who run organizations that rely on volunteers for this. So to start out here, why do people volunteer?
One of the things that motivates people to make this resolution to volunteer in the new year is often just knowing